Welcome to the Auto Fire Power Hour. We are back with a part two of Potpourri, and that's only because we were probably going to be, fuck you, motorcycle. We were probably going to be doing a three-hour banger, so I decided mid-episode, I am not going to fucking edit a goddamn three-hour podcast. I'm not going to edit a one-hour and ten-minute podcast, friend. So we're gonna separate these two. So welcome back. We've got a couple more topics that kind of jump to and fro in the video game industry, or the video game collecting hobby, whatever the fuck you want to call it, Jack. But I'll go first. I have a little topic that I want to get out there, and it has to do with product misconceptions, a little bit of hipsterism in there, and also you know, being a little bit more open-minded when it comes to how cheap I am and when it comes to spending some money. So all of the stuff that I'm going to be talking about is arcade-centric. You haven't been a video game collector really ever. You are an avid video game player, but collecting has never really been a thing that you've had much of. Is that a safe thing to say, that you're not super into collecting video games?
That is safe to say. When I was a kid, I had almost OCD about the video game boxes.
Of course.
And to go ahead and date myself, I got the original 8-bit Nintendo when I was 5 or 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But even at that incredibly young age, I would hold on to the boxes the way that a collector would.
Yes.
Unlike every other 7-year-old who just ripped them to shreds and threw them away.
Hence some of the values of these goddamn games.
Today. And very recently, I just through 3 a.m. Googling or whatever, I stumbled across like an original unopened Legend of Zelda box, 8-bit Legend of Zelda box. And it was, I think, several hundred dollars.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just so tempted.
That's so cool.
I'm not a collector. I have thought about collecting that one item.
Right.
And that is probably, that would be the thing that I would collect.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, no.
Okay. So I have been collecting video games since the late 90s. I've said this on the show before, but I had one enormous collection that I sold for fucking peanuts, for pennies, because no one gave a shit about it.
Well, what was so cool about your collecting, at least during a period of time when you and I were friends, is that there got to a point where you had every system that I would have ever wanted to play and didn't have as a kid, including like Neo Geo was the most obvious.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was like I could go over to your house
and fulfill your fucking Ricky Schroeder jealousy.
And it was like, it was like something like Virtual Boy.
Yeah.
Like I always wanted to check it out, but it was a shitty system.
And you were never going to buy it.
Yeah. But you did.
Sure did. Sure did.
So I could play Virtual Boy. I could play Neo Geo.
I bought a Virtual Boy pretty much contemporaneously, but it was when it was clear that no one was buying it. I picked one up brand new and a bunch of games. The games were $5 a piece, and the system was $25.
Yeah, well.
And I remember that vividly because of like what the markdown was.
Prices like that, you can't afford not to buy.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And I became the only person in our neighborhood that had a Virtual Boy, which had a, I don't want to say power, but the feeling, the perception of power.
Yeah.
But anyway. So I've collected console games, and I've sold console games. The first collection that I sold was, again, peanuts. So much like crazy expensive shit today that I wish I still had to flip. The second time I got into collecting, which that kind of picked up, started in 2009 and kind of petered out in 2015. And that's because I did the right thing and sold that shit off I mean, the values are up today still. Like it's still climbing, which is fucking crazy to me. I never would have guessed that some of this stuff, you know, and it's not everything, but like, you know, like boxed NES games, Sega Saturn games. That's one that really surprises me, is how fucking crazy. Ray, who's not here to defend himself right now, spends an obscene amount of money on Saturn games.
Because it's all going to pay off one day.
One day. But he has this goal, and you know, he'll get there. I fucking believe in my pal. He's going to get there. But he has this goal of owning every U.S. Saturn game.
And what's the number on that?
You
can ballpark it?
I think it's not much, like compared to other libraries. We're around low 300s, I think.
Wow.
That's just the U.S. one. But you could have done that 10, 15 years ago and not spend a whole lot of money and like fucking forget about it now. Like it's very expensive to do what he's doing. And that's another reason why I got out of console gaming, because I had just had all this money sitting on my shelf and I didn't want to be one of those assholes that had a garage full of Pogs or a garage full of fucking Beanie Babies and like I just waited too long and I didn't have anything to show for it. So I got out. You can make the argument maybe I got out a little too early, but I definitely got out better on my second collection than I did on the first one. I made thousands of fucking dollars on this second collection. But I kept all of my consoles because to me, like, I can't replace those. Like, I love the authentic experience of playing using a real controller on a real system on a real old ass TV. Like, I love all that stuff. But the EverDrives made that decision so much easier for me. So I have an EverDrive for basically every system that Crix makes an EverDrive for. And I still have my core little collection. Like, for Super Nintendo, I have exactly 25 games. They are my 25 most coveted, most loved Super Nintendo games. And I have all the ones I would ever want. Genesis is probably maybe like 30 games or something like that. And then I kept the one thing I didn't sell and will never sell is all my arcade stuff. That's kind of for me what has replaced, because I'm gonna collect something, right? I'm one of the you've seen it. I have an embarrassing amount of fucking amiibos. It is amazing that a woman married me. So many precious moments dolls.
Yeah, well, and probably 8 different versions of Mario, I think, something like
somewhere
that.
In the neighborhood.
On a prior podcast, I was listening to an old podcast that we did recently, and we talked about how many different times you've bought Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yeah.
Between that and the number of Mario amiibos that you have.
Too many. I think it's safe to say too many.
Yeah, just the raw amount of money that you've invested into Mario-esque products.
Right.
It's pretty, well, some would say weird. I would say impressive. So.
Well, that's why you and I click together so well.
That's right. why we're here.
And welcome to Narcissists Complimenting Each Other. A new podcast vehicle that I'm starting right now. Robbie, your face is so symmetrical.
I have the golden ratio, Brian. I have the golden ratio. I'm blessed.
You are. You're just blessed. And I with my raw power and physical specimenship. But anyway, so I still collect video games, but specifically I mainly only collect arcade stuff. Now, the problem with that is that arcade stuff takes up a whole lot of space. So I have my first arcade cabinet was a 4-slot Neo Geo, which I bought off a friend of the show and founder of ArcadeWorks.net, Quan. Sold it to me for a good deal, and that's another thing too. All the prices on console stuff have gone up, but the arcade stuff is even crazier. So and
that was a good moment in our lives, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Oh, the two Joes. Let's tell the story.
Go ahead.
So it's all lined up. I've already bought the cabinet off of my friend, and it's just a matter of picking the fucking thing up. And we had this deal arranged where that friend, he was getting an arcade cabinet delivered to him from an auction that he won. The auction is the Captain's. If anyone in the Orange County area knows, that's kind of like the biggest arcade auction in Southern California.
Can I recommend that? Enough.
It's so fun. It's so fun.
Yeah, if you want to just see hundreds of arcade cabinets going for pretty cheap.
Yeah.
It's been
not anymore.
Years.
Yeah,
okay,
it's not anymore.
Well, if you want to see it pretty cheap, go there in 2014.
Yeah, exactly. But it's still worth going to, and you still can pick up a deal depending on what you're after. And it's this glorious collection of fucking like silver ponytailed old school arcade operators. And then like fucking nerds like us who like are grown men now with money to play with, and we're just trying to fucking fill the hole in our psyches.
So many silver ponytails.
Yeah, so many silver ponytails.
That's the go-to.
Yeah. Never change. Never change arcade operators.
I just like that each one looks at the other one and is like, that's what I need to look like.
Yeah, exactly. So
I gotta grow it out a few more inches.
Get that Atari t-shirt. I'm gonna shave the top of my head and dye it gray. I'm doing that. That's what I'm gonna do. That's my new look.
You aspire to get to.
Yeah, I'm gonna jumpstart my male pattern baldness. Many people would be like, you've got such a thick head of hair. I don't want it. I don't want it. I want to be an arcade operator, damn it. So anyway, back to the story of how I got my first cabinet. The truck that was going to drop off my friend's cabinet and then load on my cabinet and deliver it to me on the way back to where that truck originated from breaks down. And you had come over. We'd planned the whole thing. It was like a big
meticulously
day.
Meticulously planned.
Meticulously
You've
planned.
You've waited your whole life
yes.
for this.
Like, that's not an exaggeration. Like, I ever since being a little kid and watching Silver Spoon starring yeah. the one and only Ricky Schroeder.
The one and only.
The one and only. That motherfucker had a train yeah. in his house, and he had an arcade in his
yes,
house.
Yes, he did.
And if I was going to have one of those two things, and believe me, I want both.
Yeah.
And if I could, I'd add a third. It'd be a water slide in my own house. But if I can have only one of those things, it's going to be a goddamn in-home arcade. And this was the first step to accomplishing that mission.
So, and I thought that this was a big enough deal that I blew off work.
You sure did.
just to be there when it arrived.
Yes. So we were like, oh, holy shit, this day's fucking ruined. We got to figure it out. So yeah. I'm scrambling. And at the time I was on a good gig, a good paying gig. And it's one of the few times in my life where I was like, well, fuck it. You know, let's throw some money to solve this problem, which is something I do not do. I suffer to make sure that the money in my bank account stays in my bank account.
Right.
But on this day, there was nothing that was going to stop this. So I go and I look for like a short turnaround moving company, and like I'm calling people and everyone's like, nope, I'm already on a gig. Of course, like it's like 4 p.m. So everyone's already working on something. Yeah. I find this magical phone number, and it was, I think it was called like the Joe's or something like that.
Joe's Movers.
Joe's Movers or something.
Very nondescript.
Yeah. And it was these like, so I call them up and yep, we're ready to go. Tell us where you want. Here's the money. Like, or here's how much it costs. I have no problem paying it. So we connect all that information, and it's these two little, now albeit they are athletic looking, but my leg probably weighed more than one of these guys.
Height challenged. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and they're both named Joe. So they were affectionately named the Joes.
I love that. It's called Joe's Movers. You just call and it's like Joe's cell phone. And you get straight to Joe.
Well, I think what it is Joe like saw an opportunity, and maybe his uncle, also named Joe, I'm assuming, sold him a fucking really, really rinkety dink box truck that fucking has no ramp or lift gate or anything. And so they show up in this broken ass truck with, again, no ramp, no lift gate. And these guys are like, maybe 150 pounds soaking wet. And that's being generous.
So the visual is important here because first of all, you're in a desperate situation.
Very desperate.
And you just reach out. It's not like we're checking Yelp reviews and these guys had 55-star reviews or something.
No, these are the guys that answered. That's what they were.
These are the guys who answered. They have a suspicious sounding name. Yeah. You know, just getting the business license. What's your business called? Joe's Movers.
Yeah. Joe's Moving Truck. LLC.
And then they show up in a moving truck that looks like it was just like part of a drug deal in an alley.
Oh, absolutely. It looks like cartel equipment. Right. Like, no question about it.
A lot of stolen property had gone through that truck. And then these two guys who don't look like they can lift, you know, like a 40-pound box, much less like a 300-pound cabinet or however.
Which is exactly what they had to do because, again, no lift gate, no ramp. These guys, and I have a bad back. I'm not going to I can't even get in there. That's like part of this whole thing is like, I need the bodies and the truck to make this fucking dream happen, right? And so they come, they show up, and we're both skeptical, you and I, because you're there too. You're on this journey with me, hand in hand. And they show up, and I'm just like, fuck, we're done. Like, whatever. These two little powerhouses, both of them together, but still only them, like just fucking power lift this thing on the truck, secure it. And that's done. So I'm like, okay, wow, I can't believe they did it. Now we have some other hurdles. How are they going to get it off of the truck, number one? And is the truck going to go to where I live? Like, because they could just fucking drive away, and now they've got a Neo Geo.
Yeah.
They miss out on the $200 that I'm going to pay them, but they've gained a fucking Neo Geo arcade cabinet. They could put that in a laundromat and earn $200.
Very quickly.
Very quickly. Just put Bust a Move in there, and you're done. You're printing money. So that was another thing, worry on my mind. But to the Joe's credit, everything went off without a hitch. They were able to very successfully and safely get the cabinet off of the truck with no ramp and no lift gate.
Yeah.
And then they go up my fucking stairs.
Upstairs. Not easy stairs either.
In the shittiest fucking dolly I've ever seen, too. Like, that dolly will look like if you breathed on it wrong, it would fucking fall apart. But for whatever reason, stars were aligned. Yeah. And it all worked out, and after this entire process, you and I were shoulder to shoulder playing Windjammers and Bust a Move just like God intended.
They put the effort in too. It was not effortless by their
part. It is like part. to this day, Uncle Bob, that is probably the most satisfied I've ever felt like hiring a service. Yeah. If it hasn't been made perfectly clear, I'm so cheap. So tipping, like I tip because of social pressure, but whenever I can get away with it, I don't tip. So I look for fucking bad service so I can feel justified in not tipping. These guys worked so fucking hard that I think I tipped them $100 on top of what I was already going to give them because I was so, like, you guys saved the fucking day.
They totally did.
You deserve, like, above and beyond what we've agreed, and that's what they got.
We don't know if the Joes are still in business, but if
I'd like to think they are.
Yeah, I'd like to think they are. Anybody out there listening, if you need a moving company, just Google Joe's Movers.
What could go wrong?
Wherever they are.
Wherever they are. Indianapolis. Pensacola, Florida. They're there. They'll be there. Just look it up. Trust us.
Just look it up. Trust. A ringing endorsement for Joe's Movers all over America.
Yeah. Also, if a little upstart, if you're hungry, check out McDonald's. I recommend you Google a McDonald's, eat right. a sandwich or two.
And if you're looking at starting a company, just naming the company your first name and what you do is apparently a way to get business.
Which is a perfect segue for me to introduce my new business venture, Brian's McDonald's.
Brian's McDonald's.
I'm starting my own restaurant chain. And it's going to be great. It's going to be wonderful.
You have no legal issues there.
Nothing. Well, it's off to the races, full steam ahead.
Right.
So anyway, that's the story of how I got my first cabinet. The second one is a... So I've always wanted that Neo Geo 4-slot, which is like the cabinet that I grew up on in our neighborhood that you and I both came to be in. There was a donut store that had this cabinet, the exact same model, and that's the one I ended up getting. The second cabinet I bought was a Astro City. I've always wanted a Japanese-style cabinet, and I always wanted one next to a big-ass fucking Western cabinet because I like the look. I like the East meets West. Like, this is how we grew up playing arcade games, and this is how Japanese kids grew up playing games.
And describe those cabinets.
So, if you're unfamiliar, they are, like almost futurist-looking, like white plastic, white metal. They're all sit-down, not cocktail-style, but, like, imagine, like, a Mortal Kombat or a Street Fighter machine, but, like, with, like, its legs cut off, and you have to sit in a chair to play it. And that's like the de facto style of Japanese arcade games from like the 80s on, even to now. Like, there's, you'll still see a resemblance to these things in the games that they still make. So that was always those two. That's what I wanted. Of course, I always want more, but those two were the big ones, and I'm happy to say I have that. Now, there's a third arcade cabinet that came into being that I am proud to say I'm a curator on, but I'm not the owner. And that would be your absolutely pristine, like, we can't say enough how good this fucking thing looks, but there's a Killer Instinct.
Yes.
Killer Instinct 1, the one that matters, in a Midway cabinet. Everything, what appears to be original, but all the things that you can upgrade looks like they've been upgraded. So new sticks, new buttons, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that one, again, you own, but is under my roof.
That one came courtesy of a client of mine who owed me a favor, but not this big of a favor, and paid for that cabinet. And then we had to wait quite a while for
months,
it. Yeah, and there was some question as to whether or not my client, who was doing this for me as a favor, got scammed.
Right.
And then it worked out, and then it showed up. And then after a discussion with my wife about whether or not we could fit it in our stand-up shower in the bathroom.
Which is what I recommended. Yeah. I recommend you just put it in the bathroom. Fuck it.
Right. And I agree with that recommendation.
It's a good one. It's solid.
Right. And then my wife, who was several months pregnant, I think, when this came.
Weird. Weird she thought this was a bad idea.
Yeah. So we decide that for the time being, yes, it will be in Brian's living room as curator. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, it lives up. I mean, it looks the part.
Yeah.
It plays the part. It's a great game. It was absolutely on my bucket list. It was for me that game that every kid of our age has that game that they played in the arcade all the time.
Right.
That was my game. And the only sad thing about it is that because it's in your living room and not mine, you kick my ass every time we play it against each other.
Well, yeah, and that's going to happen. And it may continue to. Whenever the shift happens and we get it into wherever you end up moving, it's probably going to still be that way, because I got to tell you, I put some time in. I put some time in just like you did back in the day, too. I'm a huge Killer Instinct fan. So anyway, under my roof, my home arcade with visiting Killer Instinct, we're up to three cabinets. And I always wanted to have, I want somewhere in the neighborhood of five. Probably can't talk my wife into five.
Well, at least not without a dedicated, like a basement or a garage or something.
Yeah, no, we would literally have to move out of the state to make this to make this happen. But I want to have like some four or five machines, and then like a pinball table, and then maybe, and this is total pie in the sky, but like either a basketball game, like a hot shot, or like a skee ball to tie the whole thing up. Like I literally live in a fucking arcade, right?
How about air hockey? Is that doing anything for you?
Air hockey does a lot for me, but I want it there, but to me, it would be more like awe-inspiring if you walked into someone's house and there was a skee ball table.
Yeah, definitely.
So, whereas I would never kick air hockey out of bed. Repeat, never kick air hockey out of bed. I think the impression of seeing like a skee ball thing would be...
Skee ball with a couple tickets coming out of the...
Exactly. Oh, and I would absolutely make sure that shit was running proper. And I would just be ordering my own tickets to be printed, and it would be wonderful.
What would your pinball game of choice be?
So, any one of these three, Adam's Family, the original Elvira, and Mars Attacks.
I recently looked up the top 10 highest rated pinball games ever, and Addams Family is consistently roughly in the top five on almost any list.
Addams Family and the Twilight Zone are
you see those two?
Those two always.
And it's a medieval one.
Medieval Madness.
Yeah,
that's one. Really, really good. That's a really good pinball table. For me, it's I would go Addams Family because that's the one that I grew up playing. That was in like every when that movie came out and it was a giant hit, which is weird that an Addams Family movie was a giant hit, but it was. That pinball table was fucking everywhere. You couldn't go into a sit down Pizza Hut. Which don't exist anymore, but you couldn't go into one and not see that table.
The movie was such a hit. MC Hammer got a number one hit song out of it.
I believe so. Counter programming to Vanilla Ice's Ninja Turtle hit. 92 was a great fucking year.
Great year.
No doubt about that. Did the fucking Macho Man getting his arm gnawed on by a cobra angle in 92? Oh God, what a good year for media.
A lot going on.
Yeah. Yes. So, we were talking about arcades and whatnot. Anyway, so that's the pinball I would get would be that. And like I said, so we're close, right? I have these three machines under my roof. So there's these arcade one-ups. Are you familiar with these? Do you know about these?
No.
So the arcade collecting thing, like video games, has also transcended into this. And this is where hipsterism is going to click in here.
Okay.
As you know, I like to have my hidden treasures. Some things, like Shenmue, for example, I would be fine with becoming the most popular thing on the planet because it just guarantees me more Shenmue.
Yeah.
But some of these other things that I want to keep my own personal little hidden treasures, such as fucking video game collecting, they've escaped me. Like the genie's come out of the bottle. And I'm an obstinate, cynical prick, and I am what I am. And so sometimes that kind of bums me out because there's downsides to it. Like one being that like some of these really expensive games that I was lagged on and didn't buy when they were affordable are now no longer affordable. And so that sucks. That's a downside to it. And when we're talking about old stuff, like there's a finite number of this. So when the demand goes up and the supply stays the same, then that's the natural evolution of things. Like shit that you didn't buy or couldn't buy at the time, you will now most likely not be able to buy because of how expensive it is. Killer Instinct, for a perfect example. I remember the first arcade auction I ever went to, which was 2011 or 12, I think. It was at the Captain's, and there was three Killer Instinct 1s and two Killer Instinct 2s, and all of them sold for well under $500.
Oh my God.
A pop. And I don't know if you want to reveal.
We can reveal.
How much was the one that you got?
I believe it was between $3,000 and $4,000.
Yes, and that's an insane premium. Yours again. It's a fucking clean, beautiful machine.
Looks great.
Looks like it just came off the fucking factory line. Yeah. However, that's still an insane amount of money. It's crazy amount of money.
Yeah.
That's like whatever asshole toy hauler guy. That's like you can buy a Kawasaki 4x4 with that kind of money, whatever it is. But everyone's got their own deals. Arcade stuff is my deal. So this company comes out capitalizing on this this movement, largely because of the popularity of YouTube channels that go over retro games and stuff like that. Podcasts such as this one, but not this one because we don't have that many downloads. But there's a lot of people that talk about this stuff, so it's natural for what has happened to happen. So Arcade 1-Up comes out, and the first thing they do is they license a Street Fighter, and they release like it's a 3/4 scale build-it-yourself arcade cabinet with an LCD monitor and arcade controls, and then boom. Now anyone who's like had just a casual interest in having an arcade in their house can go to Walmart and buy these things. They retail for like $300. The first one I think was Street Fighter 2, and it was a collection of three different versions of Street Fighter 2. And then there was like a Galaga one, and I think Space Invaders and Asteroids. That was like the initial rollout. And they sucked. Like they fucking sucked. The wood that they used was like the cheapest, chintziest particle board you can imagine.
Yeah.
The controls are the drizzling shits. Like the joysticks felt like they would break in like a week, and the buttons were just mushy. So I initially poo-pooed the fuck out of them, and for the most part, continued to poo-poo the fuck out of them. But then they announced the Mortal Kombat one, right? And they wisely chose the Mortal Kombat 2 art to be on the display. So it's like a 3/4 scale Mortal Kombat 2 cabinet, and even the body style like mimics them. It's not exactly the Midway style cabinet, but it mimics it.
Yeah.
And that one was like, well, I may have to do that, because here's the thing with when it comes to American arcade stuff, it is notoriously shoddy. Like so much of that stuff doesn't work anymore. So many like things like the 90s capacitor crisis affected these things and destroyed these boards.
Well, and again, on Killer Instinct, right? The hard drives.
Yeah.
Killer Instinct use a hard drive, and the hard drives have almost all failed.
Very few work with the original hard drive. Yeah.
So you have to use flash drives, right. I guess, as a make good.
Yeah. Some hero, and I can't remember the name, but some hero reverse engineered the BIOS of Killer Instinct and made it so that it would run on anything really. Like if they even make an SD card version of it that supposedly loads faster.
Yeah.
Which I don't think you don't really need that because like if you're not loading much, it's fucking a game from 1995.
Yeah. Available for your home in 1995.
That audio file, yeah. And some FMVs, yeah. Of, yeah, like T-Hawk flexing or something.
Yeah, exactly. But there's so much of that stuff in the arcade community that rules, like people like doing all this like crazy engineering work to preserve things. Another real famous one is the CPS2 board. So that's like your Street Fighter Alphas and like your Versus series. Those are beloved Capcom fighting games. Those were on a board that had a suicide battery. And that's what was Capcom's piracy check, was like if this battery lost its voltage, and it would lose an encrypted key that accessed the game's code. So when this battery dies, this whole game dies.
Oh my God.
And like that was a thing where that was, you know, there was no answer to that for quite a while until this guy named Rizzula figured that shit out. And that's what, whenever you hear a Phoenixed game, it's because of this guy's work, who figured out a way to preserve these games, you know, theoretically for forever, as long as silicon can fucking hold up. So there's all that kind of stuff. And the Killer Instinct one was what came out of that same environment of problem solving. And I see the arcade one up thing as like that too, where it's like, it, you know, like these aren't full size cabinets. But like, it's still somebody going out there and like making arcade games, which to me, like, I don't ever want to live in a world that doesn't have arcade games.
Yeah.
Like I love them. I grew up going to arcades. They make me so happy. It's not even funny.
I thought that they were dead, and then you showed me round one,
yeah.
In Orange County, and that was such a wonderland. It was like marching through the desert or something, and then you just like, get to the away, and you're like, this is still here.
Yeah.
And there's all these games, and they're new games. It wasn't just like a retro arcade.
Right.
It was like, and there's a lot of Japanese games. And that was the one where we played, oh man, what was that Japanese four-player?
Oh, Darius Burst.
There you go.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, I never heard of that, never seen it before.
But when you sat down and played it, you were like, I need this in my fucking life.
I pirated the soundtrack the second you got it home.
You sure did.
So when you do the cut for this segment, use that song from Darius Burst to show all the people how
amazing. Don't gotta threaten me with a good time,
yeah,
pal.
Yeah, oh, it's so good, so good.
But back to these arcade one-up things, I poo-pooed them, I shit on them. I think most of us, and by us I mean like, you know, people who've been collecting real arcade stuff for a while, and that's the hipsterism, full transparency. It's just kind of a shitty way to live your life. But for people like me, right. Like it's so hard to not do that.
Yeah.
I gotta say, the Mortal Kombat one, like, because I'm never gonna be able to get one of those. Because again, the prices go up, and then you're dealing with like all the faulty components. Oh, and another aspect about American arcade hardware that sucks is that it uses -5 volt, which so the Japanese arcade amusement standard, JAMA, is all the voltages across the same. It was always the same. So in theory, with few exceptions, you could have an arcade cabinet that if it was wired for JAMA, you put any game you want in there, and then boom, you're off to the races. You'd have to change, you know, button configurations, or maybe swap out a joystick for like a spinner if you're like trying to put Arkanoid into something. But yeah. But by and large, there's a standard. In America, there was kind of a weird fakey standard. It was based on JAMA, but they added this -5 volt thing. So what that does is it narrows down what like cabinets can use what boards. And Mortal Kombat and all the Midway games. So we're talking NBA Jam, all those like super peak, like really, really important Midway arcade games. Like you need specific shit for them to work. So I kind of gave up on the Mortal Kombat thing. And then price, of course, all that other shit. So the arcade one-up thing happens. I don't buy it immediately because I'm like turned off by the shittiness of the build quality and stuff. But then I start hearing like through my various channels and sources that they're actually like getting better and better. I kept my eye on the Mortal Kombat thing. This most recent Black Friday sale, $100 off. So we're down to just $200. And at that point, like,
it's like Virtual Boy.
Yeah. Like, I am losing money by not buying this tiny little Mortal Kombat thing. So I buy it. I bring it home. My son is 5, as you know. And it was something where, like, at the very least, like, I'll get to build this thing with him and it'll be fun. Like, yeah. It's like doing a big fucking model or a puzzle. We'll, you know, knock it out in an hour and a half. And like, if this thing is a piece of shit, I still have this cool little experience with my son and it wasn't that expensive. And at the end of the day, I can just look at it, you know, like it's a tiny little Mortal Kombat 2. It's adorable. I showed you a picture of it. It's objectively fucking awesome looking.
Right.
Blown away by this thing. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it is up to the quality of like the Killer Instinct we keep talking about in terms of like the density of the wood and the controls and all that stuff.
No, but you also paid 1/12 as yeah. much.
Yeah, exactly. But I was blown away by it. And my first experience with these things was the Galaga cabinet. I walked into a Fry's and like just put my hands on it. I was like, I will never buy one of these because it felt so chintzy and shitty. They have definitely improved the quality on those. So if you've been like me and you've been on the fence, and there's all these arcade one-up sales going on during the holidays, if you're curious, I would say just do it. If you have the means, just do it. It's they're fun to build. Like, I had a good time with my son building it. Not hard at all. Just all you need is a Phillips head screwdriver. And again, just looking at the thing is great. But playing it, I've been having a hoot of a time. I haven't had it that long, so maybe we'll talk again in 2 months when like the shitty joystick and shitty buttons have been destroyed by a 5-year-old. But so far, so good. And I got to say, the emulation on the thing is great. Here's some real fucking what's inside baseball is the term I'm searching for that kind of blew me away. But are you familiar with the EJB menus at all?
No, or maybe.
Okay, so a little bit of a background backstory. Mortal Kombat, the series, kind of known for its secrets, right? Like, that was like a big appeal of getting kids to pump quarters in was to like fight Reptile or like figure out a fatality or what have you. Those fucking sneaky sneaks had a code in all of the Mortal Kombats that has been hidden for 20 years. It only finally came out in 2016.
What?
You swear to God.
How do I not know this?
I don't know. I don't know. But I know it, and that's what's important. So EJB stands for Edward, whatever. Let's say Jacob. Boone. And the way the codes work is you can walk up to any arcade or any Mortal Kombat arcade unit without putting in a quarter, and you do a sequence of block button pushes. So, and you can look this up. Anyone can Google this. It's like on the left side, player one, push block 10 times, player two, 5 times, and then whatever the rest of the sequence is. I'm not going to say it here because you all have the fucking internet and can see it. But it works on every Mortal Kombat, 1, 2, 3, and Ultimate 3. And you access this secret menu that allows you to watch endings, watch fatality demonstrations. Like, there's a secret message that Ed Boon put in for his family where it says, like, I want to thank these people. And that dude sat on that secret for all those fucking years.
20 years.
Yeah. And and those codes work on this little thing, which is so much fun to do because you can. And it's actually functional, too. Like, a complaint, which is an accurate complaint about these things, is the sound is up way too high. So, like, if you have – there's only 3 volume settings. It's just off, medium, and then loud. And medium is a little bit too loud, and then loud, fucking forget about it. Like, the speaker cracks. Like, it doesn't sound good at all. But when you hit this menu, you can adjust the volume, and it saves. It, like, saves in there. For Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3, there was 3 hidden characters that you had to either put in a really long, ridiculous code, or I think they might have been time release. Either way, you punch in the code, and then you just hit the enable hidden flag. And then as long as you have a high score and you save your initials, boom, it's saved in there forever. So you don't have to do this shit again. And just doing that. So we're talking building this little fucking thing and being able to put in those codes on
right. And it works.
And it works. But being able to do these codes on like on a, we'll say, arcade adjacent device.
Yeah.
Just felt cool. And boom, $200 well spent. Like, I'm happy.
You haven't played the game yet. you plug it in, you get to a secret menu.
Yeah, well, and it was as fulfilling as I needed it to be. But no, the emulation is solid. The monitor isn't the worst thing in the world. It's not a fucking, like, you know, CRT arcade monitor like how the professionals do it.
Yeah, right.
But it's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. So what I'll say about these things, again, and I've said if you've been curious, just when you get one on sale, it's worth the sale price. I still stand by they are not worth $300. And some of them are even more expensive. Like, there's a Ninja Turtles 4-player one that I think goes for $350.
Oh.
But even that one is like starting to dip into sales and stuff. So there, I would say move on these if you've had your eye on one for $200 or less. It's worth it. And now that they're the build qualities are better and they use better materials than they did when they first started.
And what are they? What's the actual name?
They're Arcade 1-Up.
Arcade
1-Up, yeah. And they're available everywhere, like Walmart, Target. Costco has like a deluxe version of the Mortal Kombat one, which comes with a fucking stool that has a dragon on it. And God damn it, I really wanted that one. But I'm not going to, again, I'm not going to pay $300 plus for these things. Right. Cause that will buy me another arcade board. And that's what's important to me is having the authentic shit.
So now your home arcade includes, your original Neo Geo that the Joes moved in, mm-hmm. the Japanese one that you talked about,
yes.
the Killer Instinct that is on loan.
Yes.
On permanent loan for a while.
Yeah.
Long-term loan. And now this little,
Mortal Kombat.
So yeah,
we're getting there. It's happening. It's fucking happening. I just need to start sawzawing huge tunnel holes in my wall so I can get that fucking in-home Silver Spoons train going, but we'll get there. The other thing I'm going to point out,
true.
And I'm eating up some time cause I want to get to your topic. So I'll try to keep this one brief, but it's in the same exact category. For those of you who do own real arcade cabinets, JAMA arcade cabinets, and you have been curious about buying a Pandora's box off of eBay or AliExpress or any of these other, outlets that sell fucking wonderful Chinese piracy. do not delay. Buy one today. I finally did it, and I was always against it because I've always heard that they sucked and the emulation is so bad that it's not worth your time. And I went along with that. I was like, okay, sounds about right. I don't want to put one of these things in one of my machines and then have it like fucking, you know, cause a house fire. Then I'm really fucked and yeah. I can't play with any of my babies anymore. So that was another thing. But finally, there's one specific model that I heard good things about. And I looked into it and then I saw it on eBay and it was only like $40. So I own a Super Gun. And if you don't know what a Super Gun is a little box that emulates an arcade cabinet, basically. It's got a JAMA harness and some buttons to act like your coins and all that shit. And you plug in controllers and it becomes a console. So I can play all my arcade collection on a TV if I want, which sometimes I do because I want to play an arcade game on a couch because who the fuck can do that? I can. and it's empowering. So I had it tested there first because if I was going to melt down anything, I'd rather melt down a Super Gun than a fucking multi-$1,000 arcade cabinet or my house.
Right.
Which
includes my arcade cabinet.
Right, So then we'd all be affected. Yeah. So I had that thing. I would rock and roll with it every day for like a week. And not only is the emulation fine, like beyond for what you're paying, it's so beyond fine. It's not even fucking funny. But I'm happy to say nothing has burned down so far.
Don't bury the lead, Brian.
Yeah, you're right. I should have gone with that first. But these things, so the one I got it's pink. It looks like it's in the form factor of a PlayStation 4, but just small. And it's called the Pandora Box 5S. I can't speak to the other ones. They very well might burn down your house and be really shitty. But this one has 1,299 games on there.
Wow.
Very, very few repeating games. It has an awe-inspiring amount of like really, really obscure shit.
Yeah.
So if you're like really nerdy about arcade games like I am, like there's a Chimera Beast ROM on there, which is like a famous unreleased Data East shooter. Tattoo Assassins, which is a infamous Mortal Kombat clone that only two exist. One of them is in an arcade in Illinois called Galloping Ghosts, which one day you and I are going to get on a plane.
We're going to Illinois.
Pal, real quick on Galloping Ghosts, it's the biggest arcade in the world, period.
Oh.
It's insane. Like when we're done here, go and do a. There's a walkthrough on YouTube of the arcade that takes 3 hours.
What? Oh my God. Yeah. Where in Illinois is this? Like Chicago area? Or?
So Midway is a very famously based in Chicago. The city where Galloping Ghost is like on the outskirts, is a suburb of Chicago. And the reason why it is what it is because all of these old exit Midway people, and not just Midway, but Bally and like all these other arcade companies, Gottlieb. That was based in Midway. All those guys kept a lot of shit and they're in this one arcade and it is like an absolute destination. There's a big video game convention that happens in Milwaukee, the Midwest Classic, which is a good driving distance to this arcade. So whenever that show happens, like this people like from all over the world travel to this one arcade. And I've always wanted to go. It's going to happen. It's the only place that has a Primal Rage 2 that works. It's plugged in. You can play it. They have the Beavis and Butthead arcade game. So much shit. So that's the end of the fucking Galloping Ghosts plug. But the Pandora's Box has a lot of these ROMs on there. And there's no other way for you to be able to play these things other than like a good ROM set for MAME, which, you know, many, many people have.
Yeah.
Or to play the real deal, you go to Galloping Ghosts. Or thirdly, you buy one of these fucking Pandora's boxes and you throw it in your candy cab, right, and you get a little bit of a shock, nothing huge, a little bit of a buzz when you touch wires. Don't worry about it. It's part of the experience. But yeah, it's another example of things I was scared to spend money on that I did spend my money on. And a lot of people poo-poo them, but I'm here to say I've actually done these experiences. And I will say that no, there is some juice here. Both of these products are a lot better than I think a lot of people would lead you to believe.
Are there any ROMs in particular that you had a good time with?
On the Pandora? So many. So first of all, like the entire CPS2 library is on there. So every Street Fighter Alpha game, Alien vs. Predator, The Punisher, which is like my all-time favorite brawler, is on there. And if you know anything about that game, that arcade game, it's now well into the thousands to get a real Punisher. Quan has one. Little bastard. But then what I love about it is, and I've been, so I stopped at the, or started at the top of the list, and I'm like, fuck it, I'm gonna play every one of these goddamn games. I'm not gonna sit here and give an hour of my time to each game, especially because there are many, like every other system, many bad arcade games.
Yeah.
But I will like give it like a minute and see what's there. A lot of these games I'd never even heard of. There's a classic Gottlieb game called Argus, which I fell in love with. It's a single screen game where you play as like a little superhero, and you're a dude in a cape and a mask, and it's kind of got like a tongue in cheek sense of humor, and you have to like fly, and because aliens will come and grab people off the street, and then you have to fly up and like buzz into them, and then also save the people before they splat under the ground, and it's got this like kind of like a Tick or the Tick feel behind it. So just being able to discover these games and playing them on an arcade cabinet fucking rules. And then the coup de grace. Tons, and I'm talking tons of porno games on this thing. The funniest kind of porno games, like your gals panics. I found a game called Excelsior, and it is the only porn game I've seen that's equal opportunity. You can pick a female avatar character.
Oh my!
And chisel out a hunk, which I imagine went over very well at the various truck stops that this thing was installed at.
Do you have your selection of hunks though, or are you just
you are fed a string of hunks in a curated order? But I will say without equivocation, they are bona fide hunks. Bona fide hunks. Keyword
4-bit hunks.
In quotes, bona fide.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the end of my fucking my arcade deluge of advice.
Right. So there you go, people. You want porn games and you want chisel out hunks.
Yep. You go to the Pandora's box.
Pandora's box. Yeah.
5S, pink plastic, looks like a bootleg PlayStation 4. You can't go wrong. Although I take no responsibility if your house burns down. If you're
or if your kids are exposed to sex at a way too early age.
Either way, also not my responsibility.
Yeah, I know.
I did not test these things. I just bought the one that I have, and so far so good. So what topic are we going to wind this one down on with here?
Ringing endorsements. All right. So I wanted to and have wanted to talk about the so-called Epic Game Store and specifically Epic exclusives.
Mm-hmm.
And this is much like the Blizzard topic. It's kind of an echo of a prior topic. You and I did a potpourri episode maybe a year ago, over a year ago, where the Epic Store was coming out.
Yes,
yeah, and that's right. I was in favor of it because I said, "Look, Steam hasn't innovated at all, and I love Steam. I love the sales. It's fine, but this will force Steam to innovate in a way that it hasn't had to in the past.
It's had absolutely nothing to challenge it for its throne.
No, and Valve as a company hasn't had to release games in 15 freaking years because they've just survived off Steam sales. And Gabe Newell is a billionaire now because of Steam, not because of Half-Life.
He's still fat.
Yeah. Yes. And probably lonely. So he's never seen the inside of a gym, unlike Billy Mitchell.
Oh, every day.
Big Bill.
Wakes up at 5 a.m., gets that cardio in. Love you, Bill.
Puts on his USA tie. And
that's fucking right, because he's a winner.
So so the Epic Store has now come out,
mm-hmm.
and the big controversy is that it is there's a number of games that are becoming exclusive to Epic.
Yeah.
And this is controversial for a couple of reasons. One, people are annoyed by the fact that they have to have multiple logins and multiple registrations for multiple stores.
I want to jump in here right here because this is something I wanted to bring up. So since we're here now, let's just go for it. I am not, I don't even claim to have anywhere near the amount of hours of PC gaming like you do. Like you, that's like you, it's been your bread and butter for the majority of your life. Of course, you had your Super Nintendos and your whatnots, but yeah. You are what I would call a PC gamer,
no doubt.
And why do you care? Why, who fucking cares? Like, I don't understand why people hate the whole launcher thing. Educate me.
I can't educate you in a way that'll make sense. I can give you the reason, but it's not a.
I'll take whatever you want to give me.
Okay, so what I'm giving you is, people of my ilk don't like signing up for things. even if it's free, if you have to register it, and
if it's free, you don't want to do it.
Yeah, and even if the registration is as simple as a first and last name and an email address, and then confirming the verification email that gets sent to you. Yeah, and you know what? I have not signed up for the Epic Games Store.
Not enough time in the day.
Well, and here's the other part of it is that when you have Steam, and because Steam was the only thing that was out there for so long, I have probably close to 200 games on Steam. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, I have access through their family sharing thing to my sister's games and my other friend's games. And so the collective games that I have access to at any given time is probably like 500.
Yeah. And you have more games on Steam than you could possibly play through in like your immediate lifetime.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, it's a problem that has become a cliche is that people buy games on Steam sales and then never play them.
Yeah. I force myself to at least turn the game on.
And in some ways it feels like I'm paying a penance for how I spent my early 20s, where I pirated games that I wouldn't pay for. Yeah. Now I pay for games I'm not actually even playing.
Well, you pay like a dollar for them, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
sometimes $10.
Yeah. So part of it is just you want all your games to be in one place. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of pushback when EA did Origin.
Yeah.
And I did that for a couple games, Mass Effect 3.
You had to do it for Mass Effect 3, right?
Because I was forced to. Right. And even that is annoying to me that my Mass Effect 1 and 2 are on Steam, but Mass Effect 3 is on Origin.
Right.
But I didn't have a choice, and I wasn't going to not play. So, but that's what it takes to get me over the hump. You got to have like Mass Effect 3 on a platform.
You got to have exclusives.
And then the other game that I played on Origin, to just tee this up for another podcast, mm-hmm. SimCity.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, 2013. So stay tuned for more on that, people. Mm-hmm. But if given a choice, you want your games all in one place, Steam is that one place. And Epic, it's one thing for EA to do it because EA was doing it with EA games.
Yeah.
So it's not but that we're happy about it, but it's more like we understood.
Well, and also EA did it before anyone else. And EA, although, you know, things are slipping over there. But when Origin launched, EA was like the – obviously they're still a gigantic fucking company. But back then they were like – the biggest video game outside of like maybe the first party like Sony's and Nintendo's. They were the biggest video game.
It felt like they were about as big as everything else combined.
For sure.
They were so big.
Yeah.
So Epic comes out with their launcher, and then now they're also doing Epic exclusives, but it's more than what EA was doing, and it's for games that aren't developed by Epic. They're just doing it as a launcher the way that Steam has a launcher.
Right. And they're just going out and like getting people into contracts so they get exclusivity.
And so the negative side of that is guys like me don't want to sign up for another service, and they don't want to have their games in more than one place. In addition, the launcher itself was and is lacking a significant number of features, the most pertinent of which, bizarrely, is a shopping cart.
Huh.
So you don't have a shopping cart in the Epic Games Store.
So you just buy them one at a time.
You buy your games one at a time.
That's the Nintendo difference.
So, so people don't like the experience of actually using the Epic Games Store.
Yeah.
On top of the other more irrational reasons that I suggested. The pro Epic Games side of it, though, is really twofold. On the one hand, much like what we're seeing with the streaming wars that we're now in the thick of with Disney Plus and Hulu and Netflix. And
don't
HBO
forget
Go.
QB, which is coming out soon. That's Meg Whitman and Jeff Katzenberg's new venture.
Oh.
They just announced they got a new season of Reno 911 happening, exclusive to their fucking streaming service.
So people out there, not like we're starved for media content by any means, but you're about to see media wars that are going to last for probably 3 to 5 years, and then there'll be consolidation again. And then
either Netflix or Disney will buy the other one out.
Yeah, that's what I assume will be the end result of all this. But in the short term, it's going to be great for consumers because they're going to spend obscene amounts of money creating content to try to outdo one another.
Right.
Which is exactly what happens in every other medium until one wins and then there's consolidation and then you end up with two players again. Okay. So a version of that is happening also with these launchers now. You still have Origin out there, but the real battle is between Epic and
Steam. Yeah, that's the real one. Because Origin, as far as I understand, Origin still exists. You can play your games and whatever and launch them through that. But
correct.
EA games come out day and date on Steam.
That's actually a very recent change.
Yeah.
And there are games that have been exclusive to Origin that I don't even know if they're out yet, but there have been announcements that those games that were exclusive are now going to be able to be found on Steam, if not already, then soon.
But so it's got to go back the other way now, though, right? With the way with all the business trends that are happening now where they're competing. Like, don't you think EA is going to be like, hey, we're still EA. We still have all of our stuff, so let's bring it back to Origin? Or back exclusive to Origin, I should say.
It depends on the game. If the game is enough of a mover where it's like Mass Effect 3 was the biggest game that came out when it came out.
Yeah.
Then yeah, sure, something like that. But I think actually it'll just be like basically what Epic is doing where it'll be exclusive for a while.
Timed exclusive.
Yeah, to get you to use their service, and then eventually when nobody cares anymore, they'll put it back on a platform so that people like me who don't want to participate in the exclusive platform will now still give the company revenue by getting it on the third-party
platform.
It's so
funny. So like your perspective is the PC gamer perspective, and I come from the physical media like shelf queen perspective, whereas like a game that I really want will come out digitally and I won't buy it because I know like it's going to be that kind of a game where like a company like Limited Run or some of these smaller publishers is going to do a physical release. So I'll wait like sometimes like a year or something like that. And because I want to own a physical version of the game because, you know, that's the way my broken brain is.
Yeah. Well, that's right. So I will wait, too, for the game to not be exclusive to the Epic anymore and then to show up on Steam. And there's a couple of games that are coming out. I just showed you one earlier made by the developer of Bastion.
Right.
The game is called Hades.
Yeah.
And that game has been exclusive to Epic for a year. And it's just now hitting Steam. Yeah, and part of the justification for me also is that the game was early access on Epic's platform. So I can kind of convince myself like, well, it was early access, so they would have done a bunch of patches. So
yeah.
I'm getting a more complete version of the game than I would have got a year later. Yeah, I had to wait, but it's not like I haven't had content in other games to play. So it's fine. The other part of this, though, and there's an interesting economic component to this, because Epic is paying largely indie developers to put their hyped indie games on Epic as an exclusive. And so the gaming community, which is largely supportive of smaller entities and indie developers and the little guy versus the big guy and all that, is having a tough time with this because gamers mostly don't like the implementation of the Epic Store for the reasons I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
However, they do like helping out the small guy, and the small guy is benefited from having their games exclusively on Epic for a while because Epic is paying them.
Yeah, you're getting money.
Yeah.
We talked about Shenmue for a big bulk of part one of this thing, and that's like a big point of contention with Shenmue fans was it was the Kickstarter said you'll get a Steam key or a physical PC version for, you know, the weirdos like me out there.
Yeah.
But there's the Epic Store didn't even exist. But then years into Shenmue's development, we're talking months before the release of this game, they said, yeah, we're exclusive now to Epic. And like all these people lost their shit.
That's right.
And I'm sitting back being like, I got a PlayStation. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck.
You guys.
I don't give a fuck about what you guys are talking about. So I had no pony in that race.
Right. Well, that's a little more egregious because that's a broken promise, I think.
Yeah. And I think, and I might be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure that they tried to rectify it by, of course, offering refunds if you didn't want it, or you could switch to a PlayStation version. And I want to say that that there was like a low-key Steam version that you could still get, but it's not officially available for sale on Steam.
Well, and I think part of the explanation, too, is like, hey, we are still coming out on Steam.
Yeah.
Just not right away.
Exactly.
So with these Epic exclusives with the indie gaming scene, there's a lot of, and actually the example I just gave with Hades, that developer, I think Supergiant Games.
Supergiant, that's right. Greg Kasavin.
Greg, so the former editor in chief of GameSpot.com.
From the beginning, I believe.
Yeah, and all credit to him, man. There's a lot of guys who just stay in the peanut gallery and they want to be the critic.
Yeah.
And he left that cushy position at basically the only gaming site that ever, the big fish gaming site.
Well, IGN says hello.
I mean, okay, so it's fine.
But one of two. Yeah.
And he went into it.
Yeah.
And he made games now that are subject to other people's criticisms.
But all of his games, like all of them, are very highly rated and seem to sell pretty well.
And I've played all of them, and they are all great.
Yeah.
And except Hades, because it's on because it's on Epic.
And you are not going to fill your name into a box.
Right. But no, can't do that. And you have to send you an email, and you got to click a button.
Oh, God.
Unbelievable. So anyway, so that game comes out on Steam, I think in 3 days, mm-hmm. and I will buy it and I will play it then, and I'm sure I'll have fun with it. But I'm not actually mad because it's like, well, Epic did pay these guys to get a year of exclusivity for it. I'm happy that.
Yeah, and I feel exactly the same as Shenmue. Like if their money deal that they got from being exclusive made that game that much more
right,
of
helps
what
fun
I like,
development,
fucking
right?
go for it.
Yeah. So the Epic thing is it's interesting because people don't and you're starting to hear this in the streaming wars too. It's like, oh, I got to have a Disney Plus login and a Hulu login and an HBO login and a Netflix login. Like, oh, there's too much. But that inconvenience aside, you as a consumer are ultimately benefited from the more players in the game, the better. Yeah. And Epic's actions right now, even though it's shitty that they don't have a shopping cart, you better believe that they're working on that pretty fast.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because they need to compete with Steam.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to compete with Origin.
And I'm sure there's going to be their version of the Epic Summer Sale and all that other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And
they
still
have to. There's no way around it.
And Good Old Games is still out there, and Blizzard has a launcher for their stuff. And all these different things are in one way or another competing with each other, although Epic and Steam that's the big competition right now because they have access to almost every game.
Yeah.
And so that's the head-to-head.
I was just going to say the only launcher I use is Steam, but you reminded me of Good Old Games. I do actually use their... Because all their shit's DRM-free, which rules.
Yes.
So you can just fucking launch it through Windows or right. DOSBox, whatever you're playing. But I actually do use... it's called GOG Galaxy. And yeah. I don't mind it at all. I think it's, you know, like I the interface is fine. Like it has whatever dumb version of achievements that I don't pay attention to there.
I love achievements.
I like trophies. And the reason why I like trophies is because like I understand trophies, but like the like achievement score stuff that's been around. I mean, it's funny that we're talking about this because, you know, achievement scores on Xbox has been around for like fucking like 15 years now. But I like having a gold trophy versus like 200 points. Like that to me, I'm going to go with the trophy guy because I think, you know, I think of a case, I think of a virtual trophy case
right.
and that makes me happy.
And when you see platinum in there, you know,
that's exactly right.
Yeah. You know, you've done something.
Yeah. I think a good looking teeth is what I think of.
So when you started the GOG Galaxy, did you have to register for that?
Oh my God. Yeah. I had to fucking type my first and last name into a box and then get this. I put in my email. And then they have the fucking nerve to email that email and make me click on a link. And then we were done.
So that's the difference between you and me, Brian.
I'm a sheep. You're a wolf.
I play by my own rules.
That's right.
You want me to do stuff? I'm not doing stuff.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Is there... Okay. Because you didn't really sufficiently answer my question in terms of like why do people bitch about this, so I'll posit another one. Does running all of these launchers, is it like resource intensive?
Oh, God, no.
So then, I mean, I really, okay.
I did answer your question.
Okay.
People don't like to sign up for things, and people want to have all of their stuff in one spot.
But can't you do, like, because and this is me being ignorant to the whole thing, but can't you, for example, I've done this. So I bought the re-release of Turok, the Dinosaur Hunter, because I hate my life. I bought that on good old games, but I was able to add it to my Steam library so I can launch it from Steam.
Yeah. That you can do that. You can't cross-pollinate with Epic and Steam, I don't think.
Okay. So like if I downloaded whatever, you have a list of some of the exclusive games there.
Yeah, and right, we should go over that list because there's quite a number.
There's some big names there.
Well, and the most notable off the top of my head while I'm pulling up the list is Borderlands. The most recent Borderlands game. Yeah, is Borderlands 3 is exclusive to Epic. And so that's a problem because Borderlands 1 and 2 is on Steam.
Right.
It was a very popular series.
Super popular.
And if you want to get Borderlands 3, you got to go over to Epic. And God forbid, you want to get two games at the same time.
Because they have no fucking shopping cart.
So you buy the one and then you buy the second one. Okay. I don't know if that applies to DLC, but can you imagine you buy the game and then you got to buy each individual DLC?
I can't be that way. And if it is, it won't be for much longer. So, so with this one in particular and the way these new exclusives rolling out forward, with no cross-pollination, you can't even, is there a way with like, you know, the fucking, the workshop community that does stuff Like, is there a workaround?
I don't think so. And the thing that I thought of, and it's so funny, this is like, I want to give myself some credit here, because when we did that last podcast a year ago, when we talked about all this happening,
yeah.
At the very end of that podcast, I threw it to your listeners out there. I said, hey, anybody out there, invent the I think it's called Trillium, the instant the instant messaging app.
Dude, I was in my brain trying to fucking dig that name out, and thank you so much for being the wizard and finding it.
Right. So,
because that's the solution.
Yeah. So for all the kids out there, Trillium was a instant messaging app that combined all the other instant messaging apps back when instant messaging was all the rage before everybody had cell phones.
You had MSN Messenger, you had AIM, you had the ICQ.
What was the Hotmail one was, I think, was the most popular one. I forgot what it was called.
No, the most popular one had to be AIM.
Oh, it had to be AIM.
Yeah,
no,
America
right.
Online.
Yeah,
Instant Messenger.
But AIM, ICQ, and then there was a Microsoft one.
Yeah, that was MSN Messenger.
Yeah, okay. So there was that. Mm-hmm. And then this one app came in, and it allowed you to talk to everybody. You need one of those for the launcher, for these video game launchers. I don't think that it exists yet. And also, I'm not sure if it'll be able to exist. I would imagine there's going to be some lawsuits because Epic wants to hold on to, they want to keep you in their
Sure.
And so does Steam.
You know what's funny is, we've mentioned several times like the other media streaming stuff that's happening at the same time as all this stuff. So the Wii U, which no one bought, had this service on there for a long time where you can control your TV with just the gamepad, like program it to use the infrared signal and like turn your TV on and off and volume and up and down, all that other shit. There was a separate app that it no longer exists. You can't get it anymore. And it was called Nintendo TV, of course, spelt with two I's, because why wouldn't you do that? Yeah. But it was the Trillium of streaming, but on a platform that no one fucking gave a shit about. But it you would type in whatever you wanted to see. So let's say I want to look at, I don't know, Dolph Lundgren in The Punisher, right? So I would type in that, and it would search for me Amazon Prime, Netflix, and Hulu to find the video. And then it would just show the video. I would click on the video, and it would, in the background, just open whatever streaming app that it was currently offered on, and I would just watch the video.
Well, and there is a website out there now for... rather than specific content, like you mentioned, but for like movies called, I think it's called Decider.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll put in, I don't know, the Ninja Turtles movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll tell
great
you.
Great fucking picture.
That's my
go-to. Great picture.
And it'll tell you which, like where you can stream that.
Okay.
The problem though is that the content switches so often.
Yeah.
You know, the movies rotate off of Netflix or onto HBO or whatever, that the website isn't really useful for that. And then the other part of it is that on something like Amazon Prime, if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, there are some movies that you get for free just for being an Amazon subscriber.
And then the other ones you,
and the other ones you actually have to pay for. And so, and then the website doesn't do a good job at that.
You know what's funny? Like, so the most, not the upcoming Star Wars that comes out in like a matter of weeks, but the middle one.
Jedi.
Yeah. Or Last Jedi. Who cares? It's bad. Star Wars is bad. But it's on Netflix and Disney Plus is out now.
Yeah.
And it's the one, it's like the hole in the library.
And if you go to Disney Plus and try to, it's listed there.
Yeah.
And then if you try to play it, it says something like, due to contractual commitments, this movie will not premiere on Disney Plus until, it is the month of December, I think it's going
to
actually show
up. Okay, so it's like, it's in its dying days on Netflix before it goes home, so to speak.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's
kind of. So that more kids can be more thoroughly disappointed, but in one home.
So, all right, so here's the list of some of these Epic exclusives. So we mentioned Borderlands 3, Beyond Two Souls. These are older games, but they had some degree of acclaim when they came out.
Mm-hmm.
Detroit Become Human, a big one we talked about off air for a second. The Division 2, created by my former employer, Massive Entertainment. Fortnite, obviously, because that's the Epic bread and butter.
Yeah, the Epic store came out because of Fortnite.
And all the money that they're paying to these indie developers is Fortnite money. Ghost Recon, Breakpoint, the Ghostbusters video game, Gods and Monsters, Griftlands, which is an indie game made by a developer who made another really popular indie game that I can't think of. Hades, I mentioned, Heavy Rain.
So like every David Cage game ever is on there.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, I didn't know this actually. Magic the Gathering Arena.
Oh.
And that's really popular. And that's, at least it's on this list, assuming this unnamed website is accurate, Magic the Gathering Arena is exclusive.
Well, you can name, let's name the website.
Fine, gamewatcher.com.
There we go. So that way we don't look like clowns. I know, so we're not when this is all wrong.
So if it, right, so if it's wrong, it's gamewatcher.com's fault, not our fault.
That's right.
MechWarrior 5, a couple more, an Oddworld game.
You mentioned, did you say Outer Red Worlds. Dead yet?
Well, I haven't gone to the R's, but yeah, Red Dead Redemption 2 is on there. So that was a small window. That was like a 90-day window where it was exclusive.
Yeah, because Rockstar is coming out with their own launcher, right? Or it's actually out now, I think. Because it is out. Because if you'd got it, you would get, I think, GTA 4 and Bully for free.
And Red Dead becomes available on Steam in this month, at some point in December.
Okay.
And this is important to me because the original Red Dead Redemption did not ever come out on PC.
That's right.
And so
that's
I have never played it. And it's one of the biggest holes in my gaming life.
You know what's funny is we have this in common. I've had Red Dead Redemption, the original one. I've had it on my PS3 hard drive for years. And I have only turned it on once. I've never played it.
And when Last of Us came out, I borrowed a PlayStation to play that game. So I knew what people were talking about when everybody was fucking talking about
it.
And Red Dead, I did not do that. And now Red Dead Redemption 2 is coming out. Yep. I hope to God I'm not missing anything by not playing the first one, because I'm absolutely going to play the second one. But it's this weird gulf in my life because I wasn't able to play the first one, and I wasn't able to play the second one for the last year that it's existed.
Right.
It's also been exclusive to console. Then it comes out on PC, and it's on this other launcher that I refuse to participate in. So
you just can't win.
You've
got to make some concessions.
Yeah,
here,
I've had to wait and wait and wait. Yeah, yeah. So I will say, though, that when PS5 comes out next year, I will be a day one purchaser of that.
Maybe yeah.
You and I should do a live podcast of our camp out.
Your first non-Nintendo console maybe ever, right?
I had the Xbox One.
That's
Brian,
right.
You heavily modded.
You sure did.
Yeah.
I remember that little baby.
So it will be my first non-Nintendo console since 2003. So you're talking about 16 years.
Yeah.
And my first Sony console ever.
Ever, yeah.
And I'm going to get it. And one of the things I'm most looking forward to, much like when we talked about the Nintendo, the Wii U that nobody bought, and then all those games came out on the Switch.
Which everyone bought.
Which everyone bought, including me. So it feels like I'm getting two consoles worth of content.
You are. It's you absolutely are.
Right. So I'm going to buy a PS5, and I hope to be able to play all these PlayStation exclusives I've been missing out on. The Spider-Man game.
Well, that's the thing about the PlayStation 5 that like heavily rumored to be backwards compatible with the entire PlayStation library going back to 1.
And that's going to be a thing in my life.
Yeah.
I
really hope that's a thing that like happens, because I have a huge PS2 library and PS3. PS1 library is not so big because I was a misguided N64 kid, as I've said ad nauseum, but I've always like the PS2 in particular is like one of the best libraries of all time. And like, I don't know if you know much about PS2s, but they're fucking awful, and they're all they all break, and the backwards compatible PS3s are now all starting to break. So there needs to be something.
Yeah.
And I could obviously go the super expensive PC route and do emulation, but fuck on that. If you're going to sell me a $400 console that does it, I'm all the way in.
I've heard those rumors too. I hope they are true. And if they are, I'm going to do with my family what you did with yours for Shenmue, which is to kick them all out of the house.
Get the fuck out of here. Daddy's got a party.
Daddy needs a weekend. Yeah. It's going to be 72 hours straight of me like playing through all the Grand Theft Autos or whatever I missed.
Sorry. Yeah.
A couple more exclusives because they're relevant. Rocket League, really popular game.
That's
exclusive
huge.
To Epic. Shenmue 3.
Wait. Going back to Rocket League, didn't Epic buy Psyonix?
I think
the developer of it. So that'll stay exclusive.
Roller Coaster Tycoon Adventures, Rune 2, The Settlers. What was the other big one I saw down here? Oh, Super Meat Boy Forever. Oh, and here's one. Telltale's The Walking Dead, the final season. So if you want to actually see how...
That's amazing.
That's so cool. It's like you've got to participate.
You have to.
They're a launcher. So, all right. Unreal Tournament, and that's all it's worth mentioning. So some pretty known games on there.
Yeah. Okay. So I do understand the bitch about it. Because, look, I will make fun of you until I'm blue in the face. But
I gave my reasons.
No, but I do get them. Like, I understand it. Like, versus if the option was do something and do nothing to enjoy your games, then do nothing should be the answer. Exactly. I get that. It is funny to make fun of that you guys are all complaining about this.
It would take less time to sign up for the Epic Games Store than it would to just take, like, your average bathroom break.
Yeah, easily. Easily. And we've also clearly mentioned that it is not resource intensive, so it kind of doesn't matter at all.
That's not an issue.
So, but I get it. You guys are weird, just like I'm weird in our different ways.
There's another icon on your desktop, you know.
Oh, disgusting.
Yeah. Disgrazie.
As my people proudly say. I wanted to do a segue because I think it's still on topic, but we can kind of close out the show with this. And you and I haven't talked about this at all. We're going straight into this, but it's relevant. Stadia.
Right. We have not talked about it. I'm in the no camp.
I think the world is in the no camp.
Oh, that I didn't know. Oh, yeah. I don't know what the public.
So the launch, have you followed the launch of it at all?
Well, yeah. I mean, I watched it. I saw it happen. Okay. I haven't really paid attention to the reaction to it. Right. I just saw it and I was like, not for me.
So the launch has been like everything that they, almost everything, I'll be fair, almost everything that they promised at that, you know, very fucking Bay Area-esque press confrontation that they did with like beautifully clean, sterile walls and like Japanese style paper.
And a lot of guys in t-shirts and sport coats.
Oh God, it was so gross.
Yeah. That's the silver ponytail of the Bay Silicon Area. Valley.
That's exactly right.
A t-shirt and a sport coat.
And they all have an uncle who fucking owns a company that buys up properties to keep the properties vacant while a bunch of homeless people sit there and suffer and say, fuck San Francisco. Anyway.
But we digress.
Yeah. Anyway, so this thing has come out and it's just been a nightmare. Like,
it's actually out now.
Oh, it came out in November. So if you did the Founders Edition or whatever they call it, it was like $149 or something like that, and you get like the controller, and you get a Chromecast Ultra, and I think you get a free like 6-year-old game or whatever.
My, where the hell have I been? I wasn't aware that it came out. I wasn't aware that issues.
It came out in November.
The issues I assume are latency based, right?
So there is some latency based shit. It sounds more to me that like people were under the impression that this thing was going to be 4K 60 frames locked and stocked, but it is not. Like it runs pretty decently at 1080, which to me is like, well, it's fucking good enough, but what do I know? I'm a console gamer. So like I get like PC people want like the latest and the greatest. And
you guys
all that
have
stuff.
Lower expectations. I get it.
Yeah. Cause we have better games.
That's what you should.
Yeah. We have consistently better games.
Uglier.
Better playing. But yeah, no, I get it. But again, what do I know? I own Time Killers. So. but there has been a little bit of latency stuff, but it's more about like the it's not performing at the standard that they said like was gonna be. And the other thing, and it ties into this exclusivity shit, what they're offering in terms of like what's exclusive to them, none of it is really. There's one game that is exclusive to them, and I think it's called Gilt or something like that, GILT. I don't know anything about it, and I'm not going to look into. I don't care. I'm not going to look into it. But I know that it's like the only place you can play it for now is Stadia. But the rest of the stuff they have on offer is like old games. Like, you know, I think the newest game might be like 2 years old. And here's where I'm out, all the way out. Now, first of all, I'm an old dude, and I like my physical media. I got nothing against good downloadable games. I've downloaded many, many fucking games since it's been a thing. Where I draw a line is you charge me $60 for the right to stream content, and I have to have the internet to access it at all times. I have to have all these XYZ things in order to make my purchase work. Fuck you. I'm gone. Like, it doesn't, I understand why you would want to do this. Like, cause here's the pitch. The pitch is you have a laptop, right? Let's say your laptop has a nice screen and it can do 4K, but it's not a gaming laptop. Well, with Stadia, you're playing on Google supercomputers, and it's like the highest fidelity possible. It's not anywhere near close to that.
So, because the bottleneck then is your internet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, not only that, their tech is not, it's not what it was.
Oh, it's the tech isn't even as
this whole thing was just rushed so fucking hard just to get it out for this year. Whereas they could have just said like, you know what? Not ready yet. Let's try next year and then have the thing fucking ready to go. But for whatever reason, Google was so desperate to get into the games market, and they seem to have been desperate to get in the games market for a long time now, but they thought that this was like the hot shot, that this is going to be the big thing that no one else is doing, which is kind of true. Like you have PlayStation doing PlayStation Now. They bought the Gaikai company years ago, and that's what their technology turned into, was this thing that if you have a PlayStation 4 or like certain Sony TVs, you can stream like an old PS3 game.
There was a company
OnLive. That was the big one.
GameFly. Didn't they do that?
Gamefly looked into becoming a streaming service, but they didn't have enough capital to do it.
Oh, was Gamefly just like a Netflix where they would send you CDs?
Yeah, but they were actively looking into changing their business model into being this over-the-top streaming thing. But the company that did do it and launched was OnLive, and their big issue was always the latency. They just couldn't get it good enough.
Yeah.
But you would figure Google, who I believe figured out quantum computing, can't fucking do this.
Yeah.
So, but all they had to do is wait, and they didn't. And now, like, the launch was so bad. And when we're done, you can, like, I'm sure you will, because it's a fascinating story, like, reading into it.
Oh, yeah.
The launch was so bad, and it's done so much brand damage that it's kind of like the Xbox One. Like, when they launched, when they did, like, their launch event for the Xbox One, or, like, the reveal event, I should say, they did everything wrong. And Xbox has really not recovered since then. Like, they've done a little bit better. Like, Xbox One X did some good goodwill, because it's like, this is the most powerful console you can get, and here's the proof. And they show you like a 4K Forza, and it's gorgeous. But like, when they announced that console, and they're saying like, you're not allowed to share your games, period. Go buy a game at a store. Can't share it, idiot. Fuck you. And also, here's a bunch of football games that you can watch on our console that none of you care about because you're video game nerds.
See, the thing about that too is that when you're breaking into an industry, even if you're a known brand, you still have to convince people that you're worth trusting. And you obviously, that's harder to do if you're an unknown brand. Remember you and I watching The Phantom at E3 2003?
Yes.
That was an unknown brand trying to
watched and played.
And played.
We played The Phantom.
You're one of like four people who actually played it. So it's hardest when you're an unknown brand trying to break into the industry. People are going to, especially gamers, are going to look at you, especially skeptically.
Yeah, for sure.
Google's obviously a known brand, but Microsoft was also a known brand, and people treated them skeptically when they tried to break
Sony.
Into the original Xbox.
When Sony broke into the PlayStation, they're like, well, what are you guys doing? You're an everything company, but you're not a video game company.
So you have to earn our trust.
Yeah.
And a good way to do that is to give away, to either make sure that the content is good. That's probably priority one. That's like opening a restaurant. You better make sure your food tastes really good.
Yeah, imagine that concept.
Yeah, that has to be the first priority. And then the second thing is that, to engender goodwill, then maybe you should have good games on there. You should have good service. You should do all, and you should do it more than what everybody else is doing to convince the otherwise skeptical masses that you have the wherewithal to be a player here.
Right.
And if Stadia launched, I haven't heard of the launch. I follow this stuff semi-closely, even with my work and family life. And so the marketing department, it didn't get up to my level. No. And if you're saying that if it did get up to my level, what I would hear are negative things, then that's even worse still.
It's across the board negative. And it's like I was saying, like they've done so much, this launch has done so much brand damage for them that I am doubtful that they'll be able to recover. The only way that they could do it is like keep working on that tech and really being able to like deliver a 4K 60 frames experience on like mediocre. I mean, no one thinks like if you have shitty ass fucking internet that this thing is going to work.
Yeah.
But if you have like mediocre internet, like then it needs to start working, because what's the incentive? Like if let's say I have like, and I don't know anything about fucking up and down speed, so I'm not even going to fucking pretend, but let's just say I have medium good internet. But I own all the video game consoles that I own, and I could easily stop buying fucking 35-year-old arcade boards and invest in like a really nice PC.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't, if I want that experience, why wouldn't I just do that instead of fucking rolling the dice on this fucking thing, which is a shit show?
Yeah, and there is something about owning the games.
Huge. And look, to me, and whatever, if this is my broken brain, that's what it is. I don't care. But like, to me, if I buy a game on Steam and I have it safely secured on my not even my fucking hard drive, although I am more comfortable when it's on my hard drive, but on my account so that I can log into another computer and download it there, like it's there. But with Stadia, even though it's the same on Stadia, where like you can say like, okay, here's my Stadia account and I have access to these games, the fact that I can never download those games and have like in a stationary place, I'm out, man. The only way you'll get me in is if the tech is great and the price is great, and the price needs to be fucking $10 a month, period. Well, not $60 a fucking game,
and maybe $10 a month to play games that you would otherwise have to spend $70 to get,
right,
or more,
right?
But PC games tend to be cheaper than console games in general, and then especially on with Steam summer sales and things like that, I mean, you're not really saving. I don't know, well, maybe I'm in a different demographic now, but any problem I have with video games mostly does not involve pricing issues.
Right.
If I want a game, I just buy a game.
You just get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, it's more time issues. So that part of it where it's like, well, you pay $10 a month and now you get all this. It's not as much of an incentive, at least for me and for certainly for my demographic, as I think that Google might think that it is, because the gaming itself isn't really the barrier.
Well, it becomes throwaway. Think of how long you've been a Netflix subscriber, right? There's no way you would watch all the shit that's on Netflix.
Yeah,
exactly. And we've now, that shit has been around for this long that now, like, you just grown numb to it. So, like, this is how we do it at our house, right? So, if there's nothing on that my wife or I, like, actively want to watch, like, we'll either throw on YouTube for our son and, like, go do other things, like, fart around on our phones, or I'll play a game, or she'll go, like, work on, some design or something like that. But other than that, we're just going to throw The Office on. And just have The Office be on for the fucking 30,000th time in our house, because it's background noise. You know, it is what it is. But like when Netflix first came out, like 2000, I'm talking like 2007, where you can only stream it on like a PC. And like, I had a little shitty laptop and like, I think an S video out on that bad boy. And I plugged it into like my fucking Sanyo 25-inch CRT TV. And I thought it was amazing that I could fucking watch these movies over the fucking internet. And I spent hours and hours like discovering new shows and new movies this way. But now, who gives a shit? Like it's been out. It's what I'm going to go do is do what I always do. I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch old wrestling, because that's how I fucking do it. And that, like, to me, I think if Stadia or fuck Stadia, any company, because it's inevitable. Like, you've always heard the term like the Netflix of video games, the Netflix of video games.
Yeah.
It will happen. It's inevitably going to happen. And when it does, it's probably going to be like this marvelous thing, this, you know, period of wonderment for a year, 2 years, and then you're going to get desensitized to it like everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. And the expectations will change accordingly.
Exactly.
So, yeah, Google Stadia, not a...
Nope. It's a misfire.
Yeah. Google's had a few of those lately.
Indeed. Okay, well, that was a good chunk of potpourri-ing, old friend. So we'll sign off here. So thank you for listening. And with that...